And now it's time for us to discuss some of these headlines in simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. Happy hump day and Bat Appreciation Day.
Sure, why not? The ecosystem, yeah. It all trickles down. It's a cycle, circle of life.
Yeah. Apparently they feed on mosquitoes, but apparently they don't help with the mosquito population.
You're kidding. You alluded to like a good news and then you took it away because I thought I could do without the mosquitoes. At least as much.
I wanted to keep expectations in check, and we don't want bats flying around. We'd rather probably have the mosquitoes rather than them feeding on them.
I haven't thought this through.
In the wild, I think.
All right.
I digress.
Nonetheless, happy Wednesday and apparently happy Bat Appreciation Day.
Yeah. They have a bad rep.
All right, let's get started. We have keyword news to cover, many headlines to discuss this morning, starting with the president's address. Since the ruling party's painful defeat at the general election, it's a first. Our first keyword of the day.
Yoon's address.
So President Yoon has publicly apologized for the ruling party's defeat in the general elections last week, vowing to better communicate with the people, emphasizing several times people's livelihood. But doesn't mean the ruling party will step back from all these ambitious reform plans. Run us through what the president had to say.
Yeah, so he highlighted the need for better communication as the primary focus for government reform. He acknowledged that his administration's poor communication had contributed to the loss. Now, he vowed to better engage with public sentiment as well. He also promised to adopt a more humble and flexible approach to governance. During the televised cabinet meeting, Yoon frequently mentioned the need to focus on livelihood and public sentiment. Those were the kind of the two key words that he mentioned. Additionally, in a private segment of the meeting, he discussed the election results with his aides, interpreting the public's message as a clear directive to improve communication. And he also, at the same time, offered an apology for the loss as well. He said he failed to look properly into and uphold the will of the people. Looking forward, Yoon vowed to work with the newly elected parliament and to better communicate with the opposition. He pretty much doesn't have much of a choice because they have the majority now, so he needs their cooperation in order to pursue his policies. But Yoon did make clear that the core directions of his major policy initiatives, such as economic and medical reforms, will remain unchanged. He noted that he has no intention to back down from his plans to increase med school admissions. So he's pretty adamant on that, as well as other reform plans. But he did say he will pay closer attention to what he called rational opinions. And he noted that the government must fulfill its responsibility in the areas where it can, while cooperating closely and further with the National Assembly. And he also stressed that reckless financial aid and populism would damage the nation's future in an apparent swipe at the opposition as well. So, yes, a bit more of a humble approach in terms of accepting the defeat, but there you have it. So we'll have to see if there are any talks or further talks with the opposition between the government and the Democratic Party, and how willing the DP is to cooperate as well.
Well, we'll wait and see. I mean, checks and balances, but sometimes the art of compromise is a beautiful thing to get things rolling. We'll wait and see.
Yeah.
All right, on to our second keyword this morning. Just when things were thawing between Japan and South Korea, another fundamental issue resurfaces. Our second keyword of the day.
Tokyo tensions.
A fundamental difference with a pretty large gap between how we view this territory. Japan has renewed its territorial claims to the Tokyo Islets in its diplomatic papers, sparking again strong backlash from the Korean government. What's the latest on this front, Adam?
Right, so this came in the 2024 Diplomatic Blue Book. It stated that Seoul continued its, quote, illegal occupation of Tokyo. It's a claim that has been repeatedly made in Japan's Diplomatic Blue Book since 2018. Seoul responded, of course, as you'd expect, with a strong protest against what it called Japan's repeated unfair territorial claims. And the foreign ministry called for an immediate withdrawal of the claim as well, and it also summoned the deputy chief of mission at the Japanese Japanese embassy in Seoul to lodge a protest. These are pretty much routine procedures now when such tensions do arise. Now, the Blue Book also disputed a Korean Supreme Court ruling which ordered Japanese firms to compensate Korean victims of wartime forced labor. Despite repeated requests over the years, Japan has refused to make reparations to individuals, insisting all matters are settled under this 1965 treaty that normalized bilateral ties. Now, despite these contentious issues, though, the Blue Book did emphasize the importance of Japan-Korea relations. It stated the need to expand cooperation in various fields and described Korea as a vital neighbor and partner. It referred to South Korea as a partner for the first time in 14 years, in fact, a word that it has been avoiding up until now. It pointed out that Seoul and Tokyo's close cooperation is needed now more than ever, given the grave security environment of the Indo-Pacific region. Seoul's foreign ministry hoped the two countries will cooperate closely in establishing a future-oriented relationship ahead of the 60th anniversary of diplomatic ties next year. Additionally, the Blue Book mentioned Japan's approach to China and North Korea, signaling a commitment to maintaining a constructive and stable relationship with China while closely monitoring North Korea's potential military engagements with Russia.
All right, with that, move on to our third keyword of the day.
U.S. envoy in Korea.
All right. So as we mentioned in the segment before, U.N. sanctions monitoring on North Korea came into question. The U.S. envoy in South Korea has something to say about it. So U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Linda Thomas-Greenfield says she is considering all options for an alternative to the U.N. Security Council's panel on North Korean sanctions, which is due to end at the end of this month. She was speaking while visiting the DMZ. What's the latest, Adam?
Yes, so she said the U.S. is looking at what she called out-of-the-box options with South Korea and other countries to continue the sanctions monitoring on North Korea. This comes, of course, after Russia's veto on this U.N. mandate that was actually meant to renew the sanctions monitoring panel. She emphasized ongoing close collaboration with like-minded nations such as South Korea and Japan, exploring creative ways to continue the important work previously conducted by the expert panel. She highlighted that every possibility, including options both in and out of the UN regime, must be considered. And she pointed out that Russia's veto is influenced by military cooperation between Pyongyang and Moscow. Now, she urged Moscow and Beijing to not turn a blind eye on Pyongyang's pursuit of illicit weapons programs and evading sanctions. And she also called on the North to return to dialogue rather than continuing with its escalatory rhetoric. And she reiterated that Washington harbors no hostile intent toward the North. She also met with Foreign Minister Cho Tae-yeol and Defense Minister Shin Won-sik to discuss these concerns. She wraps up her trip to Korea and flies to Japan today. So all these comments are pretty much similar sentiments and comments that come out when it comes to these issues. And the same is coming out from the UN ambassador to the UN. There's been, of course, increasing concern over Russia's kind of increasing interference, if you will, in terms of trying
support
to get these...
Support of North Korean agendas.
Mm. Right, in support of North Korean agendas. But it's becoming a concern for both Seoul and Washington.
All right, keeping close tabs on that story. We move on to the ongoing doctor strike. Could there be a breakthrough? It seems a lot is up in the air. Our fourth keyword of the day.
Residents demand.
So trainee doctors on strike have listed a number of conditions for their return and conditions for even a discussion, though, including a reduction of military service duration for doctors. But that's just a beginning. Run us through their demands.
Yeah, so it's quite a list. A resident, Ryu Okada, who conducted interviews with 20 striking residents, revealed about half of them might not return under the current circumstances. The other half would consider returning if certain conditions are met. That is a big if, of course. Now, these include a reassessment of medical school expansion plans, reduction of military service duration, easing legal liabilities for medical accidents, ensuring the right to strike, and the dismissal of the deputy health minister as well. Now, one resident in the interview mentioned that non-specialist doctors serve 18 months of active military duty whereas those who start but do not complete their residency must serve 38 months. Now, the resident emphasized the need for realistic adjustments to these terms. Another resident stressed the need for better legal protections for unavoidable medical accidents. And the residents also voiced the need for guaranteed labor rights, including the establishment of a residence union and the right to strike as well. Of course, there's been a lot of tensions with this strike or collective resignation, as the residents are putting it. The government views it as unreasonable and illegal in some sense, and the residents say they have a right to do so. So there's more tensions with that issue as well. They stated that without these rights and the removal of compulsory labor provisions in medical law, no one would return to training. And they further demanded appropriate recognition and compensation for the high demands and complexities of their fields. And they also called for the Deputy Health Minister to be dismissed for inappropriate remarks, as they saw it. Based on these findings, New urged the government to reconsider medical school expansion from the ground up, rather than framing residents as neglecting patients or using patients' lives as leverage to prevent a collapse in the healthcare system.
All right. The general elections are over, and it seems that the government has to make a move. What's next? Because this stringed out protest, it's not helping either side's agenda, if you think about it. The objective was to add more doctors to the field. If we can't train the next generation's doctors, well, we have a predicament, don't we? So we'll wait and see.
Yeah, it's a very delicate issue, and pretty adamant on both sides. And it's a lot of the kind of protests and opposition from the resident side comes from how the government went about with trying to push through with this plan. So, so basically, back to square one discussions is something that's been being called for.
You know what? Square one sounds better than whatever square we've been on for months.
Right, exactly. There's been a lot of squares around it, but from the ground up is what's being called by the residents, yeah.
All right, and let's move on to our final key word. Uncertainties in the Middle East, of course, has trickling effects in the global economy. Let's move on to our final key word of the day.
Volatile market.
So as tensions in the Middle East escalate following Iran's airstrike on Israel, Korean financial markets have experienced significant turbulence due to a sharp rise in the $1 exchange rate, a 17-month low for the Korean won. What's the latest?
Yeah, so this surge in the exchange rate, of course, was influenced by a growing aversion to risk due to the crisis in the Middle East, compounded by unexpectedly strong U.S. consumer data that pushed U.S. bond yields higher and diminished hopes, basically, for a rate cut. Now, despite the market's low expectations for a full-scale war between Iran and Israel, there's a keen focus on the movements of oil prices and the exchange rate. Now, the won strengthened dramatically against the dollar, reaching a new high for the seventh consecutive session. Sorry, the dollar strengthened dramatically against the won, and it closed at 1,394.51. That's up about 10.5 won from the previous day. It even spiked to 1,400 won earlier in the day, the highest in 17 months. The KOSPI dropped 2.28% and the KOSDAQ fell 2.3%. Foreigners and institutional investors were, of course, net sellers, exerting downward pressure on the indices. Not just the local stock market, but cryptocurrencies also felt the market's downturn as well. Bitcoin's price fell just over 0.7% by the late afternoon. Both Iran and Israel have stated they do not wish to escalate the conflicts, yet reports suggest Israel's war cabinet is considering numerous retaliation strategies. That's something we mentioned before. They want to create a shock, but not a full-scale war. Now, this situation has strengthened the dollar, causing the $1 exchange rate to spike, leading to substantial foreign capital outflows from the Korean stock market. Now, the strong U.S. retail figures for March also played a role as well, reducing the likelihood of a rate cut, which negatively affected investor sentiment. If geopolitical tensions in the Middle East do continue to intensify, there could be cuts of oil supply that might lead to higher global oil prices. This could rekindle inflation pressures, push back on rate cut expectations, and further dampen investment sentiment, increasing volatility in exchange rates and markets. But some analysts believe that since the market has already adjusted to the oil price and inflation concerns, any further market impact might be limited. So there might be some short-term fluctuations, but nothing too detrimental is what some analysts believe. But then there are others who believe otherwise.
Worsening doesn't sound like a manageable expectation, but how we'll wait and see, because our projections have been wrong before. This is why economists are usually split on their projections.
Exactly. Yes.
Thank you very much, Adam, for today's coverage. We'll speak to you again tomorrow.
You're very welcome. We'll see you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.